Welcome back here to Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on WakeUpCallDT.com, your one-stop sports shop, and the free MixLR.com/WakeUpCallDT feed. It's all free for you, so don't have to pay to listen, which is a beauty of something that I wanted to present to you and the community. So it's a way of saying thank you for listening, thank you for tuning in for over 12 and a half years, almost 13 years of broadcasting. So I can't thank the community enough, and when I say that, I'm talking about New York, I'm talking about Central New York, New York City, all throughout upstate New York, down the East Coast, into Florida, obviously Pennsylvania, people in the Midwest that have listened in, as well as all the way out to California, and outside of the country in Mexico, China, Germany. Thank you for your support, Canada as well, for everybody that is listening to the show. It is truly an honor and a privilege to wake up in the morning and do what you love. And that, I mean, there's no words for that. There is absolutely no words for that. So I'm very happy to be here on the show live with Dale Shackelford, who has called in here, Syracuse Orange men's basketball alum and my co-host for Live Syracuse pregame for our home and away games, pregaming the home games at Orange Crate Brewing Company, 721 South Krause Ave in Syracuse, New York, and for the away games, 309 East Seneca Street, in Manlius, New York, the Orange Crate Brewing Company and the Orange Crate Express, respectively. So I get to spend a lot of time with Dale, get to know kind of what Dale's thinking about this team and what's going on, and obviously it's a pleasure to be around and a pleasure to know. So I'm happy to welcome here on the show once again Dale Shackelford. Dale, how you doing?
Very good, Dan. Just down here in rainy and windy New York City.
How is New York City treating you so far?
Well, not too good. I'm visiting some friends, my roommate from college, and also friends over from England. And, you know, they feel that New York City is like England during the summertime.
Now, do you have any plans, anything you're hoping to do while you're down in New York City? I know that when I go down, I try to figure out a couple things. I like to go see Broadway shows or some places I like to eat. If I can get to my cousin's pizza shop, then I go over there. So Grand Avenue Pizza, to throw that out there, in Astoria, there's a lot of things I try to do. I want to eat good. I want to maybe see a show. I want to go into some of the places I can't find anywhere else. Do you have anything that's on your docket that you're saying, okay, you know what, while I'm down here, I need to do it, or do you kind of just wing it?
Well, no, it's like last night, we've got a friend of ours that has, he's got about 7-8 different restaurants down here in the city. And we actually went to one last night, about 5 or 6 of us. And you know, the other guys are you know, taking care of some business. And you know, I'm on air live with you, and I'm going to go check out my friend Steve at his office when we're done here.
So you get to eat, like you said, one of your friends has a bunch of restaurants in New York City. Where did you go to eat? What did you have? I mean, how are these restaurants? What can you say about some of the food that you had down there? Because a lot of people travel and migrate to New York City to try something good. So let's give him a shameless plug. What did you get while you were down there?
Well, he took us to one of his Mexican places. I mean, to be honest with you, I can't remember the name. After a couple of beers, you know, you lose track of things. So we went there, and he just gave us a variety of different things. You know, we had tacos. We had the paella, the seafood paella. We had the guacamole and chips, the pulled pork tacos, the fish tacos. We had a little bit of the dates wrapped in bacon. So he gave us a big variety of different things there, which, it was good. It was very good.
So you're eating good down in New York City. You're not going hungry down in New York.
Oh, definitely not. I've got relatives down here, so if push comes to shove, I'll just call up one of my uncles or aunts and tell them I need a quick meal before I go back to Utica.
Sounds good. Now, to go into getting to the basketball side of things, I mean, obviously being down in New York City, you're by the Mecca and by one of the teams that's most respected throughout time and one of the biggest fan bases throughout time. So before we get to Syracuse, let's go there. When it comes to the Knicks, do you try and pay close attention to the team? Is this a team that you like to see doing well? I mean, now that the Nets are in Brooklyn, do you have a team you kind of root for or watch or whatnot, or a team that you're connected to specifically in New York, or do you kind of just watch everybody?
Well, I'm very partial to the Knicks. I've been a Knicks fan, you know, all my life, since I was a young kid and everything. And I've always loved the Knicks and everything. I do watch some of the other games, but not as close as I do the Knicks.
What do you think about the Knicks right now this year? I mean, it seems like there's always some really, really good points, and then all of a sudden there's turmoil that always seems to come up. What can you say about what you've seen this year when you pay attention to them, having been a fan for so long?
Well, I mean, you know, I think the Knicks' biggest problem is, you know, that their point guard situation hasn't been up to par the last couple of years. And, you know, also, you know, defensively, they tend to come and go. I mean, if they can't run and outscore you, they're not going to be the type of team that's going to, you know, pressure you on the defensive end, on their defensive end. And, you know, I think that's been a big problem for them this year. You know, they've got a couple of decent guys in there that are, you know, inside they can play decent defense. But, you know, all in all, you know, out front there, you know, the guards and the small forwards, you know, they've got to get a little bit better.
Carmelo Anthony, obviously, coming from Syracuse, going to the Nuggets and then on to the Knicks. What do you think about that marriage right now? Is it a marriage that should end? Is it, you know, from kind of analyzing, looking at it from the outside, looking in, do you like Carmelo on the Knicks? Do you think it's time for a change? How do you view it?
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, I think that Melo needs more guys around him. You know, Melo's the type of player that he's more offensively minded now than, I would like to see him be. You know, he's got to get the other guys a little more involved and everything. I don't think it's a situation where you have to get rid of them, but you have to get guys to understand that, you know, this is what he does. You know, can you rally around him and do so many other little things that's going to help the Knicks win?
And then over to Syracuse, looking at this team. You and I have obviously, like I said, been doing the pregame for home games at Orange Crate Brewing Company and the away games at the Orange Crate Express before Syracuse men's basketball games. And we were talking going into the Pitt game and the Louisville game as well, two games that came at a terrible time for Syracuse in the sense of the way that they played. What have you taken away from Louisville and Pittsburgh when you look at Syracuse right now? What were kind of your big takeaways from two games where the team didn't play a complete 40 minutes, which is something that they had done at the beginning of the season, but they haven't been really doing lately? To see them do it again, what did you take away?
Well, I mean, you know, they're struggling against pressure. I mean, Louisville really pressured Syracuse up and down the floor, and I think you know, Pittsburgh you know, did some of the same. And you know, we've got guys that you know, really can't handle the pressure, or we don't understand how to help each other out in pressure situations. You know, team's going to press you full court. You know, you're going to have to be able to, you know, get the ball in the middle and go over the top and take it to the basket. And our forwards don't seem to be able to handle the basketball in the pressure situation. You know, if I got the ball at half court, you know, on a pressure release, I'm going to turn and I'm going to go try to attack the basket because, you know, if you get it there, you probably have an advantage of a 3-on-2 or a 2-on-1 situation, and we're not taking advantage of those opportunities that we have. And, you know, it's just a situation where, you know, the guys aren't comfortable doing that. And, you know, they've got to make a change. But, you know, this time of year, to try to get them to have that confidence in their ball handling skills, you know, it's going to be kind of tough.
With this team where it stands right now, you and I had talked about Syracuse at a point where if they had defeated Louisville, they were going to be in the top five. Duke would have helped them out a little bit with North Carolina, and you would see a Syracuse team essentially in a place where if they got a little help from the top of the ACC standings, from the North Carolinas, the Miamis, the Virginias, and Louisville, that Syracuse would be in a place where they could overtake the ACC and win the ACC. They would have to win all three games at this point and have everybody else lose in order to get themselves up there. But North Carolina, they have to win that game for the tiebreaker and hope that Miami falls a little bit here. How do you see this season for Syracuse in this moment, knowing they could have been in the top five? They still mathematically can be in the top three, but right now they sit at number nine. Did you expect them to fall to this place? And what can you say about the last couple games, knowing that they had that moment where they could have risen two or three spots, and instead they decided to continue to fall down?
Well, let's go to the game. I mean, Syracuse came out like, you know, they were the fifth best team in the conference. You know, that first 10 minutes of the game, Syracuse played well. We missed a couple of easy layups where, we should have made those shots. But all in all, you know, they played great and they held Louisville down. And then, we relaxed. You know, we got comfortable in a situation that, okay, we got the lead, and, you know, we've accomplished what we wanted to accomplish. But guess what? You know, you still had another 30 minutes left in the game to continue to put the pressure on Louisville. And that's where, you know, Syracuse is going back to their old ways, is, you know, they were getting a 30-minute game, and we're not finishing these games up. And that's where you have to, you know, be a little more, careful with the basketball. You have to be a little more aggressive, attacking the basket. You have to be a little more aggressive in your rebounding. And, you know, we just, seem to relax because, you know, we've got an 8 or 9 point lead, and the game's not over yet. And, you know, the same against Pittsburgh. I mean, we started out, okay against Pittsburgh. We had a decent lead, and we revert back to the same thing. You know, we play a 25-minute game, and, you know, Pittsburgh just did whatever they wanted to do in the latter part of the first half and in the second half. And the same with Louisville. I mean, Louisville just destroyed us in that second half. I mean, it was just like, an exhibition of dunks.
And when you look at some of those numbers, looking back at the Pittsburgh game, some things I brought up in Monday's show: Tyler Lydon, 67% from the field, 8 for 12. The other six players on Syracuse were 28.2%, 11 for 39. From three, Lydon was 4 for 8. The backcourt of Syracuse, comprised of Mike Benajie, Trevor Cooney, and Malachi Richardson, were 3 for 18. So one of the things that I brought up is, if the team's not shooting well, if the jump shot's not falling, if you're not making the threes, Trevor, Mike, and Malachi are more than capable of attacking the basket, but they don't do it. Are you seeing that as well? Would you like to see that more? Because I feel like once this team realizes they're having an off shooting night, they've lost. Instead of attacking the basket and realizing that there's a lot more you can do inside than just to continue to settle for the three on a night where you're 3 of 18.
Well, they're regressing back to the way they were earlier in the year. Live by the three, die by the three, and that's the way they've played the last few games. And, personally, I think that Coleman's been playing better inside. And, they're not even attempting to, I try to force the ball into them a couple times, because, teams are going to play us in a three-point shot anyway. So, why not get the ball inside and see what he's capable of doing, in his, 20 minutes that he's playing. So, in that sense, you got two fifth-year seniors on the team, and we still haven't found the leader on the floor to where, these guys are going to, take control and at least, help Coach Boeheim out and don't give him any more gray hairs or have any more of his hair fall out, to say that I'm going to take control of this team and, put him on my back and rally him around to, let's finish some of these games out. And they're just not doing that this year, and it's getting too late in the season right now to make too many changes.
Is there anybody you would put — I know I asked you this a couple games ago, Dale — is there anybody that you would put the ball in the hands of on the Syracuse team right now that you trust? I mean, is it Tyler Lydon? Because it seems like it can't be Malachi as of late. Mike Benajie doesn't realize still who Mike Benajie is and what he's capable of. Trevor Cooney has some positive moments, but still doesn't attack as much as I would like to see him do it, although I do think he's scrutinized more than he should be. So is there someone that you would put the ball in the hands of right now? Is there somebody you would trust with 2 seconds to go in a final shot?
Well, I'm going to go a little bit on the limb or whatever, and I'm going to go a little bit deeper. I'm going to say I would like to see Coach Boeheim make a change and start Frank Howard at the guard. Michael Benajie can play the small forward, and leave Tyler Lydon and Daywon Coleman and Trevor Cooney on the floor, and let's see what those five guys can do. And bring the other guys off the bench. Bring Malachi Richardson off the bench. Let him understand that now I've got to go out here and I've got to be aggressive, and I'm just coming in to play hard defense and help us maintain a lead. And, you know, maybe he can light a fire under Roberson to where, you know, he's going to sit and watch the game. And nobody wants to sit and watch the game. And that might light a spark under him to say, okay, maybe I need to do a little better. Maybe I need to work a little bit harder. Maybe I have to do what I did last year and what I'm capable of doing in some games this year to where he's going to come out every game from this point on and, you know, be aggressive and, you know, just try to dominate and finish whatever games up that they have the rest of the season.
I think it's very funny what you just said to say you were going out on a limb and thinking of something different. On Monday's show that aired live on February 22nd, Dale, you didn't know that I said this, but I said the exact same thing. I said, keep Trevor Cooney right there in the backcourt, bring in Frank Howard and have him be a starter because he seems to be the truest of point guards on the team right now. So have Cooney and Frank Howard, Frank bringing the ball up, then move Mike Benajay to the front court. Have Coleman and Lydon out there and have Malachi come off the bench and light a spark for Syracuse and then Tyler Roberson, use him when you need to. But what you said is exactly what I said 2 days ago. So I'm going to say I love the idea because you and I had the same one.
So. I think it's a great idea. And you know what? Frank Howard is a freshman. You know, everybody's going to always say, well, he's only a freshman. You know, whichever freshman you put out there, if you make a mistake, well, he's only a freshman. Well, guess what? Let this freshman make mistakes. Let this freshman learn to become the future leader of this team right now. You know, give them these last few games that they have to, you know, build on next year, regardless of the situation. I mean, you know, you got an outside chance of, you know, being a 10th seed, 11th seed, whatever the case may be in an NCAA tournament. And, you know, let Frank Howard get some experience under his belt, plan against some, you know, great competition, and, you know, see what we can do. You know, we got to start looking for the future and not worry about, you know, the present or the past. You know, I'm not taking away from any of these guys that are out there playing. You know, personally, I don't know what's going on with them and what they're thinking, but, you know, maybe a little, you know, change of a lineup, shake them up a little bit to, you know, get them back into the right frame of mind of basketball.
Absolutely, and I think that having Frank Howard as the point guard instead of Mike Benajay frees up Trevor Cooney to be the true shooting guard that he is. Frank Howard, I talked to him after the Pitt game and had that conversation of, you only take 2 to 4 shots a game, is this kind of your M.O.? And he said, yeah, I realize that this is who I am. This is what I want to be this season. This is what I'm meant to be for the team. I'm here to look for other guys. I'm here to create opportunities for other people. And to put him as a point guard, seeing that he can make those no-look passes, seeing his vision, the 4 assists in 6 minutes that he had a few games ago, I think the more time that Frank Howard gets out there, the more comfortable he feels, the better he feels. And he's one of those guys that I believe Adrian Autry said to me going into this year before Frank even got here, where he said, if Frank has a 50-point game or 14 assists or he's doing terrible, he's got 20 turnovers or he hasn't made a shot, if you look at his face never changes. And that is something that I truly appreciate when you look at athletes, student athletes, in the case of Frank Howard, that he's never shaken. He's there to make the next play. He looks like the true point guard of the team if I had to pick anybody. But you look at putting him there, doesn't already open up passing lanes and opportunities. It lets Cooney be Cooney. It lets Mike Benajay think about shoot first, which will hopefully make him attack the basket more, and it puts him closer to the basket to do so. And then Daywon Coleman and Tyler Lydon, you got the two best rebounders underneath. And then Roberson comes in, like I said, when he needs to. And, you know, if the argument from Boeheim is, well, I need Malachi out there to be a spark, let him be a spark off the bench just like Deion Waiters used to be.
Right, exactly. And maybe, you know, he needs to light a spark on you know, some of the players that are actually out there getting playing time and not producing. You know, bring him off the bench and he'll get something out of him.
And one of those players after the Pittsburgh game, Boeheim, and talking about Tyler Roberson, said, if I had anyone else, I wouldn't play him for a minute. Now, there's a few different things I took from that statement, but I want to ask you your initial reaction, your first reaction to hearing Boeheim say, having been your coach, knowing what he said in the past about Trevor Cooney and Rakeem Christmas, CJ Fair and whatnot, he makes the comment about Tyler Roberson, if I had anyone else, he wouldn't play a minute. What's your initial reaction to that type of statement?
Well, I see it as something where Coach Bam is trying to motivate him to, you know, come out of his shell, whatever he's in, or, you know, to, you know, get him to realize that he is a very good player. He's a very important asset to the team. You got to, you know, want to go out there and do it all the time. And if you're not going to do it all the time, then maybe you need to sit. You know, maybe sitting him will motivate him. You know, there are certain guys that, you know, you can do those things to, or they'll make them play a little better. You know, we'll find out this weekend against North Carolina State. You know, if that comment, and hopefully Tyler heard that comment, is going to, you know, make him wake up and say, okay, I'm a junior. I've got, you know, one more year, you know, to prove myself. Let me start right now. And, you know, that's what, you know, Syracuse needs. It needs him to start right now, thinking about becoming a better player and becoming a dominant player than he's capable of being.
When you look at that statement also, I went one step further with it, where he said if I had anybody else, he wouldn't play a minute for me. I looked at Chino for a moment, but Chino has really never earned time in Boeheim's eyes, so I looked more to Caleb Joseph, a former starting point guard for Syracuse as a freshman. I know that they don't play the same position, but when Boeheim said if I had anyone else, he wouldn't play a minute for me, he has cleared the bench with walk-ons in a game where he didn't even play Caleb Joseph. Is Caleb as good as gone in your mind? I know we talked about it a little bit, but after hearing him make a statement, if I had anybody else, he wouldn't play a minute, tells me he doesn't believe he has Caleb. He doesn't believe he has Chino. How do you look at it?
Well, he does have Chino if he gives him an opportunity to play a little bit more. I don't see, you know, Caleb Joseph going in the game and, you know, giving you, you know, 7 or 8 rebounds on average in a game. You know, Caleb Joseph last year, you know, he was just thrown to the wolves. You know, he was the only point guard they had. You know, he played a lot. He started a lot. He made a lot of mistakes. And, you know, now we got Frank Howard. So, you know, you bring another guy in that's playing the same position that you are. Maybe his practice habits are gone. You know, I'm going to be a little competitive with it. If a guy comes in, you know, trying to take my position, well, guess what? We're going to battle every day. You know, if it comes to where, you know, we end up squaring off and going fist to fist, you know, one of us is going to convince Coach that, you know, I deserve this playing time more than the other one, not by physically beating them up, but by physically outplaying them. And that's where, you know, we lose a lot of the competitiveness with, you know, a lot of college players now, is that you come in a highly ranked, you know, out of high school, you know, McDonald's All-American or top 10 rating in high school, and you think you're just going to walk into a situation like you're still in high school. And, you know, some of these guys are given that opportunity because the other players aren't going to, you know, battle and compete against them. And that's where, you know, you got to build some competition amongst the players to say, okay, guess what? You know, this isn't going to be the starting lineup every game. You're going to earn playing time every week and, you know, see if you can shake them up and get guys to play that way.
I had Lazarus Sims, another Syracuse Orange men's basketball alum, on the show before, speaking with you here, Dale, live on wakeupcalldt.com and mixlr.com/wakeupcalldt. He said to me that whenever Caleb was out on the floor last season as the starting point guard, he said that Caleb never took his eyes off the bench. He was always looking at the bench, and that you have to play your game. He said, listen, it took me a couple years to get comfortable, a couple years to, you know, feel good out there, but if Boeheim's going to take you out, he's going to take you out. I want to go to that notion. When you think about Caleb, do you feel like it's that mental, that constant concern? Because he seems to be someone who has had difficulty taking criticism, difficulty hearing what Boeheim has to say. Even when I've talked to him post-game last year in the 2014-15 season, when I would go in the locker room and look in his eyes when I would say, you know, Boeheim had just made the statement, how do you respond? Or this is what Boeheim is thinking, how are you going to react to it? Is he somebody that you feel was spending too much time looking at the bench when you look back on it in hindsight?
Yeah, of course. I sat with Gene Walter a lot last year and Ryan Blackwell, and you know, we made the same comments that Lazar Simmons made, that, you know, why is he looking at the bench at Coach Bayham every time he does something? And, you know, my situation, and I think a lot of other guys will agree, if the coach doesn't call my name and I'm out on a court playing and I have no reason to look at him, I've got to get myself in a situation where I can recognize his voice and hear his voice over the crowd. And that's where players, you know, you have to, you know, you block out the crowd just so you can pick out your coach's voice or your teammates' voices. And to look over at the coach all the time, every situation, you're nervous about the situation or you don't have any confidence in yourself. So, you know you make a mistake, just keep playing and try to, you know, rectify it and not make two mistakes in a row. If you're looking at the coach all the time, then guess what? You made a mistake. Now you made another mistake because you're looking at him to, you know, to give you an answer, and he doesn't have the answer. He wants you to figure it out for yourself, and you know he's got to be able to do that.
When you look at this team needing an answer moving forward, we talked about obviously Tyler Roberson. When he gets a double double, the team is 6-0, but he is not someone who is consistently done that, obviously, in 28 games. Mike Benajay has scored in double figures in all 28 games, but he barely got there this past game. Malachi Richardson was quiet, had less points than Daywon Coleman, which is something that I really can't say all too often in the 2015-16 season for Syracuse. So what are the biggest pieces that you're seeing Syracuse without right now? If you and I were walking in right now and we had to coach this team in practice, Jim Boeheim's out, the NCAA suspended him for another crazy reason, so we're in there and we're coaching this team, what would you say to the team right now? What are the pieces that they need to hear?
Well, I mean, that's a tough situation because is Boeheim coming back or is this going to be my team? So if it's my team and Boeheim's not coming back, then guess what? We're going to start from ground zero, we'll say, and this is how I want it done. You know, I need you to, you know, rebound a little bit better. I need you to, you know, be a little smarter and control the basketball. And you know, we're going to work on those situations in practice. You know, I'm going to put you in situations where you're going to be double, triple teamed in practice. Where in a game situation, you're not going to panic and just throw the ball away and throw it to anybody on the floor. And we're going to be, the team has an one time this year that I've watched the games, and I've seen every game this year bar one, that nobody sets a screen. You know, nobody makes contact on the screen. You know, we do the high screen. You know, it's just an interchange. It's not, you know, the high screener is not making contact with the defensive player. You know, we got guys running the baseline, and that's all we're doing is running the baseline. Nobody is bumping their man coming through the lane and, you know, slowing them up so that, you know, Trevor Cooney can get his feet set, or Michael Benajay can get loose and get an easy layup inside, or that Tyler Roberson is going to get the ball. I mean, Tyler, you know, he has shot, you know, the 10-12-foot jump shot a few times this year, and then he just totally went away from shooting it again. So you've got to build that confidence back in these guys to say, okay, we're going to loosen everything up a little bit. We're going to, you know, get out of the regiment. Don't look to me for answers. Let's see if you can figure it out yourself.
And when you look at the big picture of the NCAA tournament, even though Syracuse has lost their last couple games, they started out 0-4 in the ACC, then went to 8-1, and then 0-2 since then. They've dropped themselves to 8-7, almost even at 8-8. If they're to lose another game, they'll be right at 500, which is a place you don't want to be going into your conference tournament. But Syracuse has stayed within being an 11 seed to an 8 seed, according to Joe Lunardi. He has them at a 10 seed right now in a matchup with Providence that would bring them back to their old Big East days. Are you surprised that a team like Syracuse, being 8-7 in the ACC, having lost two games in a terrible way with a debacle that just got out of hand in the second half of Louisville and the second half of Pittsburgh as well, are you surprised to still see them in the predictions to get into the tournament, or is that just kind of the world we're living in with NCAA basketball this year, knowing that so many teams have lost. There are conferences that have obviously evened out maybe a little bit more from top to bottom. Is there a surprise to you that Syracuse is still in it, knowing that they're not taking care of business late?
Well, I mean, I think this year, you know, the NCAA, every conference, you know, throughout the country is wide open. I mean, anyone's capable of beating anyone. Even some of the, you know, lowly teams in the conferences are capable of playing with or beating, you know, the top teams in the conference. I mean, maybe other than Boston College and the ACC, you know, they're really struggling bad. But I don't think that, you know, there are any teams that are, you know, head and shoulders above the others. There are teams that are better than others. There are teams that play better than others as a unit. But I don't see anybody that's going to be a dominant team this year, you know, going into the NCAA tournament. I think if Syracuse gets in, you know, they've got a great opportunity. You know, we've always been the, you know, type of teams that, you know, given that opportunity in the NCAA tournament in a season where, you know, you've had some ups and downs, we're capable of, you know, stealing a few games in the tournament and redeeming ourselves, you know, for the end of the season or going into the next season. So I think Syracuse has got a good chance. Hopefully, you know, we can win all three of the last three games and or even, you know, get two out of three. But, you know, they're going to have to work hard at it, you know, to maintain that. And hopefully, you know, get the opportunity to be a surprise in the NCAA tournament.
If Syracuse plays on all cylinders at their absolute very best, Dale, how far can you see them go in the NCAA tournament? How dangerous is Syracuse if Roberson gets a double-double, if Daywon Coleman continues to improve, if Malachi, Trevor, and Mike are shooting well, if Frank's allowed to be in there, play point guard for a little bit, if Tyler Lydon's doing what he does? If that all happens, which it has in certain games, and it has, you know, in the big games against Texas A&M's and the Dukes, if Syracuse was to do that in the tournament, how dangerous are they?
Oh, Syracuse is very dangerous. I mean, you know, if Syracuse is, you know, shooting on all cylinders, where, you know, we've got our, you know, three outside players with Benjay, Cooney, you know, if we got these guys shooting the ball well, and we've got Coleman and Lydon, you know, playing well inside, and Lydon, you know, coming, you know, outside a little bit and shooting. And the zone defense is going to be tough for anyone who's never played it or never really seen it. And other teams can play a 2-3 zone, but nobody plays a 2-3 zone like Syracuse does when, you know, they want to play. So, you know, it'll be a surprise for teams that has never seen Syracuse player, never experienced playing against Syracuse, where that, you know, they're going to go far in the tournament.
There is only, when we talked about everybody in the NCAA Division I men's basketball is beatable and that conferences are open, there's only, out of 32 conferences that comprise NCAA Division I men's basketball, there is only one team in 32 conferences who remains unbeaten in their conference, and that's in the Southland Conference with Stephen F. Austin, that's 14-0. There is no one in any of the conferences, including the SEC, Pac-12, as well as the Big East, the ACC, the American, so on and so forth, Big Ten as well. There is no team out of 32 conferences outside of Stephen F. Austin in Southland that is undefeated in their conference. What does that say to you about this year? I know we talked about it a little bit, but to know that there's 32 conferences, Dale, and only one team that's undefeated, what does that mean to you?
Well, that means that whatever conference Stephen F. Austin is in, it's not really a tough conference. But I think all the other schools are getting very competitive. You know, they're taking advantage of, you know, the opportunities as far as, you know, you win at home. You know, you got to protect your home court. And I think that's what a lot of teams are doing. There are a few teams that can go on the road and beat a top team in their conference on the road. You know, that means that, you know, basketball has been very competitive. You know, the players are, you know, are being very competitive. You know, guys aren't getting, you know, nervous about who they're playing or where they're playing. You know, they're coming out and playing hard and giving 100%. So, I mean, you know, that shows that, you know, the NCAA tournament is going to be wide open. Some of the conference tournaments are going to be wide open. And, you know, teams have got to be ready, and Syracuse has definitely got to be ready to take on every challenge, but, you know, we still have to remember it's one game at a time, and you can't think ahead, you can't think about your seeding, you can't think about the standings, you can't think about anything that's ready. You're not in the top 25 in the country. You just got to play to say that, you know, I'm going to play to win every game that I play.
Well, as always, I appreciate it. Dale will be with me on Monday, February 29th. At the Orange Crate Express, the former Ugly Duckling on 309 East Seneca Street in Manlius, New York. And then you'll find us again for a live pregame show that we'll have right at the bar at the Orange Crate Express in Manlius once again on Saturday, March 5th, before the Syracuse road game against Florida State. So before North Carolina and before Florida State, and then I will be at Orange Crate Brewing Company, 721 South Krause Ave in Syracuse this coming Saturday, February 27th. Dale will be doing some of the games here when it comes to high school, and I will be live pre-gaming. So a little bit of double duty, Dale in one place, me in the other, doing things for Central New York to try and bring something different to you, something positive and something good in a world that definitely needs it. Dale, as always, I can't thank you enough. I look forward to seeing you on February 29th and March 5th, if not before then, and thank you for being a part of the show today.
Dan, thank you. It's always a pleasure working with you.
All right, I'll talk with you soon.